Mini episode 626 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this joint edition of Sportsology Radio and the FDH Lounge. It's FDH Lounge mini episode number 626. A very special panel for you today to break down the 2015 World Series. Sportsology proprietor and longtime FDH Lounge dignitary, Russ Cohen here. He, of course, being an expert on all things Mets, and we'll be talking about his book, And Numbers Don't Lie. We'll be getting into that certainly again as well, because it's very, very timely. And also a man for whom I used to do a lot of sidekicking back in the day at the old Sports Talk Network on his show, Life's a Pitch with Ken Detweiler, my longtime friend and FDH Lounge dignitary, Ken Detweiler. And again, so I guess you could say, if we put a hyphen in there, that this is the Russ Detweiler pairing, and I'm sure that they're going to have a better outing today than Ross Detweiler did most of his outings this season. So, gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Oh, indeed. Got a bad line here. I'm sorry.
No place to go but up from there.
Boy, it didn't take long. Didn't take long, Russ, did it?
No, it didn't. Yeah. That's okay.
Man,
no.
Right for the jugular. Oh.
Yes. Yes, the shenanigans start early. And again, Russ, I will start by saying congratulations. Your New York Mets in the World Series this year, and we'll be getting to this in a second here when I talk to a Ken. Ironically, sort of the same scenario I saw for my Cleveland Indians coming out of the American League. I thought if they could just win a weakened American League Central division, they would be very tough to beat in the playoffs with the depth of pitching, and the Mets really kind of seem to mirror that. Of course, the hitting is not the utter atrocity that's been most of the last couple of seasons. It's actually above average with some of the moves that they made during the year here, so how do you see things shaping up here with this this team seemingly playing with house money right now?
Yeah, I think the house money goes away once you're in the World Series. I do, and when you're not, when you don't have home field, you know, the funny thing is for the last, I don't know, decade, I didn't really worry about who won the All-Star game. It always was like a big joke. Who cares? It won't matter to the Mets. Well, it did this year. And it would have been nice if the NL would have won. Thanks, NL. But the way it sort of shakes out is the Mets have the top four pitchers that they have. You know, they have Harvey, DeGrom. And Harvey and DeGrom will definitely go twice each. They have Syndergaard, who may go twice. And then Mats will go one game, probably won't get a chance to ever go a second, probably work out of the bullpen the first couple of games maybe as a lefty out of the pen with Nice. And so you look at that and you say, well, what's so good about that? And my answer would be, Syndergaard, to me, and I wrote about this, is sort of like the Mets changeup pitcher. Like, you get Harvey, and you get, you know, mostly gas, and you get some nice pitches mixed in. You get DeGrom, and most times this year, DeGrom's actually outpitched Harvey, and so you get this guy who just throws a tremendous amount of strikes, a little faster than Harvey. And so then, you know, you would think the natural changeup guy would be a slower guy, but instead it's a faster guy in Syndergaard, who's averaged, you know, higher speed per fastball than anybody in baseball for the whole year. And so he's sort of like their changeup guy now. And then when you get the lefty's completely different. And Mats is really good, but he's on a limited pitch count, probably can only go 85 pitches. So that's, you know, that's the strength of their team. Their hitting's been good. Obviously, Daniel Murphy just had Foley's Bar named after him for the next 2 weeks, and I did a signing there. About 4 weeks ago. It would have been nice if it would have been called Murphy's then. I might have sold a few more books. But but it's a nice place. Foley's is a great place in New York. And so Murphy's hitting out of his mind. Will he continue? I don't know. He's not going to see as many lefties, so something tells me he's going to calm down a little bit. And so there's an opportunity there for guys like Duda and Cespedes and some of their other guys to sort of get hot, David Wright. And so I think people will be surprised at their lineup. And even their DH lineup they have a lot of options. They'll probably go with Conforto, who is one of their better power hitters, even though he's a rookie. I watched him in Binghamton, and I did a signing there early in the year, and I was very impressed, and I was kind of wondering even then why he wasn't up, and eventually the Mets succumbed and brought him up. And so he could play the outfield really well too, but they probably won't put him out there to start. But that gives him a good lefty bat. Most of the times he'll probably DH. You might see Kelly Johnson DH. If for some reason Darnold doesn't look good behind the plate or Casey steals too many guys, you might see Darnold as a DH and Kevin Plawecki step behind the plate, who's got a better arm and is a little better defensively. So there's a lot of options there that weren't there at the beginning of the year, and that's why when people say, hey, how come you didn't pick the Mets in April? It's like, well, the Mets had to make like three trades and get like six guys, and by the six guys, Conforto being called up, and then the other guys they got via trade, you know, Clippard and Cespedes and the others, Johnson, Uribe. Uribe, I don't think, is making the roster, but I was kind of hopeful. But all those guys have had a huge impact on this team. Without them, we wouldn't even be talking about them now. But the fact that they got them and then got on the roll, and Murphy's been pretty much fueling the team, between that and their starting pitching, it's been really good. And probably, believe it or not, the most underreported guy on the team is Jerry's Familia, who's only allowed two base runners the entire playoffs. One was a walk, and one was a base hit that Lucas Duda could have made a play on, but he made a bad play at first base. That's it. So he's been Mariano Rivera dominant, but the Mets starting staff seems to suck up all the attention, yet he's lights out. So that's something where if Royals fans want to say, hey, Wade Davis is the man, I don't disagree, but I think Familia is better.
Very interesting points there, and I have to say, too, on the point of Conforto playing DH, that's probably a good idea, because with that vast outfield there in Kansas
yep.
City, you probably want to make sure you put a priority on covering the ground. It's interesting about Matz being the guy who's only going to go once, because the contrast for that is going to be Kansas City with their amazingly soft-tossing 6'10 hurler, Chris Young. That's kind of a marvel in physics, being a soft tosser at that size. But,
you know, one thing to add about Young – you know, he did pitch for the Mets, as we know, and he was pretty good for
yes.
them, but he always seemed to get hurt. And his wife, Elizabeth, her grandfather is Lynn Patrick, who, of course, is in the National Hockey Hall of Fame. And great-grandfather is Lester Patrick. So, I mean,
oh.
Chris married into, like, the greatest hockey family, perhaps. And so when they go visit the Hall of Fame, and they just did as a family this year, they have a lot to see. There's statues of their family members there. There's a Lester Patrick
yeah.
statue staring them right in the face there. And they've, you know, these guys are Hall of Famers. They've won Stanley Cups. I've written about them in my Ranger book. So Chris Young has that going for him, too. So the Canadian press just loves him.
Oh, I can imagine. You know, Patrick, as in Patrick Division, Patrick. That
yes.
is hockey royalty. No question about
oh,
it.
Yeah.
Ken, I teased it a little bit there with Rusty, the comparison, and I put a bug in your ear off air about this, the comparison of the Mets pitching staff with what you and I are familiar with in our hometown of Cleveland here with the 2015 Indians pitching staff, and the notion of being able to go deep in a rotation like that. I'd like to get your thoughts on that, as well as for another point, a hometown reference as well, what we just saw in the American League Championship Series. Ultimately, the Toronto Blue Jays getting shut down. They're probably one of the closest teams I've seen as far as power potential to the 95 Indians in recent memory. So I'd like to get your thoughts on those two Indian squads and points of comparison to this postseason.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think pretty much you can go right down the line with the Indians compared to the Mets staff. I mean, they're young, they're talented, they throw heat, and they're around the plate. The Indians need to shore up their defense, which they did to some extent this year. But neither team has a lot of hitters. That's what makes Murphy, in my opinion, just as an outsider, guys, phenomenal. I mean, what he's done is just unbelievable. It's never happened before. So,
right.
Yeah.
How can he keep this up? Can he not keep it up? The difference again is Cespedes. We go out and get some banjo hitter, maybe. And the Mets go out and really get a ball player who has been credited for the big turnaround. I don't know if it should all go to him. Russ, you would know better.
I would say 80%, because He, Johnson and Uribe won a few games early. I was at one of those games where they really killed the Dodgers, and that gave the Met fans a little hope, but they were still like, we don't really know if we have the team yet. And Cespedes rolled in, and he was hitting homer. He was and throwing guys out like Roberto Clemente from the outfield, and those things really did propel the team. They did.
Oh, he's phenomenal to watch, and if he's healthy, he could be a real difference maker in the series, I think.
He's mostly healthy. He does have that shoulder issue. He does.
Yeah. But when Rick was talking about the Blue Jays, you know, I picked the Blue Jays to be in the series, as you know, Rick, when we were on the last time I was on with
that's
you.
That's right.
And
all over that.
I could kick myself up and down the street here because having been around baseball as long as I have, defense wins the games. Baseball is the only sport where the defense has the ball. And here again, these guys got the slam bangers. It was nice to see Batista with the bat flip and all that stuff. And it's good to see the Cubs with the wind blowing out. Well, where did that get them? Good pitching, good defense. And there again, both teams are here. And the Royals, I think, are even a better defensive team than the Mets.
Oh, they are.
I may get some kickback.
But here's the thing, Ken. Here's something that I felt – Fox totally dropped the ball on. Really, everybody in their broadcast booth, maybe they didn't want to dwell on it. You have first and third, no out.
Right.
Now, this is the American League, and this is what I hate about the American League. You guys could rail on me for it if you'd like. But sometimes it seems like managers.
I hate the American League.
It seems like
I don't like AL
brains,
ball either. I'm with you.
It seems like managers' brains get turned off. So Gibbons has first and third, and I guess Goins is the first guy up. Sure, let him hit away. Maybe he'll hit a fly ball. Maybe he'll tie up the game. Maybe he'll hit a three-run homer. When that didn't happen, though, and you know Wade Davis is in there and you know Ben Revere is up there, you still only have one out. He's very fast, so he's not going to get doubled up. Why wouldn't you go with a safety squeeze? Worst-case scenario is you'll have first and second. Best-case scenario is the run scored. Then maybe even the best case scenario is he gets a base hit because he can bunt for a base hit. Didn't even do it, never even attempted. I don't even think they looked for a sign. And they lose the game, and everybody's like, oh, well, they did their best. And I was, like, screaming. I was like, are you kidding me?
Rick knows I'm old school.
Yep.
But very old school. Get him on, get him over, get him in. Just make it that simplistic. And especially on a stage like this, gentlemen, where a one run might make the difference.
Mm-hmm.
It probably will.
It did in that game.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. But that's the way I like to watch baseball. That's the way I like to coach baseball, is get them on, get them in, over, and get them in. So.
Well, Russ, I remember your comments online about that, and it made me want to ask you, talking to you here today, is there any sense whatsoever, because, again, the Royals are a team that is very good at manufacturing runs. Do you get a sense in the Mets organization that they're kind of shaking their heads a little bit, going, I kind of wish we'd gotten a team that relies on the three-run homer as opposed to these Royals who keep coming at you?
Well, conventional thinking would tell you that that's exactly the way the Mets are built, but they did start to play a little small ball last series when they had to. When Terry Collins felt like runs were at a premium, he would do it, and there are some guys. He bunted Lucas Duda. I mean, Lucas Duda wasn't hitting homers at the time, so he bunted him, and that was a brilliant move. The bunt was a totally brilliant move. It really got them where they needed to be. David Wright, remarkably, is not only looking like a guy that's, at least temporarily beaten his back problem, but he's also now able to steal bases again. And so that's added another dimension where – all of a sudden now David Wright can steal, because Granderson's hit and miss on steals. He doesn't have the speed he used to. But if he reads a pitcher well, he could steal too. So they've got a few guys. Lagares could steal a little bit. So they can play a little small ball. It's not their objective, but they'll do it.
Well, I get the sense in looking at this, Russ, I think a lot of people would probably agree. More of the questions we have as far as what to expect probably circle around the Mets, because the Royals are not exactly the same team that was here last year. There have been some additions and some subtractions, but I think there's a greater sense of the Royals we know what we're going to get versus with the Mets. To me, the $64,000 question for this series is, The Mets' edge in starting pitching, which is there and which I think is – it's a big one. Even if situationally you can still get – we've seen a good day from Volquez, or maybe Ventura is going to pitch beyond his years from time to time. But on paper, huge edge for the Mets in starting pitching. But I'm looking at this going, you know something? Uncharted territory in terms of innings for all of these guys. That's the downside of a real young staff. So what's your sense about what's left to expect here and how much is going to be left in the can for these guys to get through the next seven-game series?
Well, I'll tell you, the Mets did such a good job, I felt, even when you sort of grit your teeth at this inning stuff, like Ken and I no doubt do and probably share that in common. They did a good job where they left a lot of innings in the bank, regardless of what Scott Boras says. And so Matt Harvey is going to pitch as much as he wants right now. There's no limit. He's not going to limit himself. He's not listening to anybody else. He finally got that message. So that part's good. Now, what does he have left in the tank? I think DeGrom has even more in the tank than what Harvey does as far as what he could offer in innings. And so what I think you're going to see is, because Reed and Clippert haven't been lights out, Nice has been okay as a lefty specialist but not ideal, you're going to see some of these starters go 7 and 8, I think, because I think they realize that that's going to be the way to win these games, is to get a lead and let their horses hold the lead until they can get to Familia, who can be a six-out guy. He's done it now a few times, two or three times. And so that's going to be a way to do it. I don't think the innings will be a problem for anybody but Matt's. And then as far as what's in the tank, I think these guys, because they had the 10 days off, will all have plenty left in the tank. I think that was a huge advantage that I think a lot of people are overlooking that the Mets had. Is, yeah, would you like to come in hot? Sure. For Daniel Murphy's sake, you would. Or would you rather reset your starting rotation and give them the rest? And, you know, right now in the world we live in, I'd rather do that.
I was going to ask you, Ken, about that. I wanted to get a follow-up from you on the innings, because I know that, you know, as Russ indicated, you, like he, are old school in that regard. But I'd like to know, Ken, what's your sense in terms of looking at these guys and the handling of them and the sports science? When you go back to and you look at how Dusty Baker like single-handedly murdered the better part of a generation with Wood and Pryor and with his usage back in the day here. So when you're looking at something like that and you got this sort of treasure chest that the Mets have, you know, and knowing that they went through the troubles of, hate to bring this up, Russ, but Generation K back in 96 and all the guys that fizzled before they made it to this point, what's your sense, Ken, of how to handle guys like this from your experience of coaching and developing in baseball?
Let me just back up just for a second, if I may. Russ and Rick, both of you, one of my concerns was the Kansas City Royals, basically, and they do have a much weaker starting rotation than the Mets.
Mm-hmm. However, and a better bullpen.
And a better bullpen, but and that's Heber, where
anyway.
Long is.
Heber.
If you can get Volquez and Cueto and Ventura and these guys to go six innings, then it's all over. In theory, as far as the Royals go. They'll shut you down, they'll lock you down. It was interesting to hear you, Russ, say that you're going to go with these extra starters like Nice and so forth, because I didn't know how they were going to fill that gap from the
starters. Yeah, Cologne, too. Cologne's going to fill
and
some of that gap.
And Cologne, too. Cologne scares me, though. Cologne, I've watched him in the playoffs, and unless I'm missing something, I don't know. He just scares me. I don't know why.
You could bring him in when you're ahead, and you could bring him in if you're behind by three or four, and he won't put you down more. I wouldn't bring him in like a tie game, or super duper close game. But he could go, like, if a guy's only going 5 2/3 like Matt, he can go a couple innings.
Yeah, and I think the way the game is played now, these innings are. You know, as a manager, you just let them throw. But I always thought, but I think we've gone to the point, we've jumped the shark, so to speak.
We have.
Because I've always told parents and stuff in high school that kids I've coached, and I've been blessed with 80-some kids going on to colleges and the pros, six of them or so. So I've always said, and no one can ever answer this for me, who came up with 100 pitches? Where did that why not 80? Why not 85? Why not 92? You know,
it's a good number. If I had to blame somebody, I would blame Tony La Russa, because it seems like the best guy to blame, him and Dave Duncan. But here's the thing, though. So you go back to, like, 86, which I guess is a million years ago. I'd like to not think it's that long ago because, you know, I was younger then. But in the NLCS, Gooden went 10, Nolan Ryan went 9, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
That's not that long ago. But then, you know, like Rick said, after Generation K, things started to change. You know, guys like Rick Peterson, all of a sudden the pitching gurus, you know, not Leo Mazzoni. He was doing it right. You know, he was the only one, but he was swimming upstream because everybody else was going short pitch counts and everybody was starting to look at the science of it, and everybody was looking at not only analytics, but then they were looking at the physiology of things. I remember Larry Christensen had that video out where you could see exactly what happens to a pitcher when he's throwing like a screwball and all those kinds of things, sliders. And so I think it all got overthought. And then what happened is, best to my ability, it started happening at the lower levels. So then, and I started seeing that when I went and I tried out for this team called the New Haven Cutters just to write about it. And in that workout, here's what I had to do. And I was already 42 years old, I think. I had to do like the 50-yard dash a couple of times. I had to take infield. I had to take batting practice. I had to run the bases. And then they decided if I would make it past the first round of cuts to play in a simulated game. The pitchers simply got up, threw like 60 pitches, and sat down and did nothing else. And I think when that started happening at the lower levels, now all of a sudden nobody has the right arm strength anymore. So now they have to go with these pitch counts because this is like you've conditioned a whole generation of pitchers starting from the very lower levels to be used to that.
I agree with that. I also see these specialists, too. That goes along with what you just said.
Yeah.
Absolutely. To answer your question, Ken, I can give you a hard question on the science of why 100. The number in terms, or the reason in terms of hard science is it's a round number. It flows off the tongue kind of easy, 100 pitches. There's your hard science, Ken. I'm glad I could clear that up for you.
I mean, I can't think, I can't tell you the year, but I know it was Tiant going against, I think it was Nolan Ryan, so we'll use his name again. And they faced off and one threw 194 pitches. The game went 12 innings and the other one threw close to 200, a little more than 200 pitches. And the complete games for both of them. And that's when the DL started, was the same year the pitch count started. And I apologize for not knowing the exact year, but to me...
73.
Well, I was going to say 74. Okay, 73. And I'm just like, look at this stuff. I mean, I just don't care. I think it's a different game. I'll just put it that way. I'm not even going to try to think it out.
It is.
Because it is what it is.
Oh, yeah. You know, in terms of the guys who helped change it, in defense of a name that came up before, I will just say past lounge guest Rick Peterson being one of the coaches on there. Give my gratitude to him for having come on the program. Exactly. But I have to bring up something here, too, and then I want to get you guys' thoughts on this, especially you, Russ. In terms of, and it was just posted at the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine, the fdhlounge.blogspot.com, same place you can find this program, the annual Notes Oddities column for the World Series, and I got a couple of weird ones here. First of all, this is the second time ever that there has been a matchup of teams that won the World Series exactly 29 and 30 years ago. In 1962, the Giants played the Yankees. And in 32 and in 33, the Giants and the Yankees won the World Series. So the National League is up 1-0, or I'm sorry, they're down 1-0 in that stat because the Yankees won the 62 World Series. So that doesn't bode well for the Mets. But I want to pick your brain on this, Russ. Help me out with this, why this is the case. The Royals beat the Blue Jays in the American League Championship Series. They are 2-0 against them lifetime. Three times a team is 2-0 against another team in the ALCS. The other two instances, the 69-70 Baltimore Orioles and Minnesota Twins, the 2000, the 2001 Yankees and Mariners. Do you see the common denominator?
Well, let's see. I guess they all played New York teams.
Yeah, they all
played
the Mets in the World Series, as are the Royals. Why is that, Russ? I'm going to put you on the spot. What's the hard science behind that?
I don't know, but I will say this. Back then, there was such a difference in leagues, it may have meant something.
Okay.
But because there's no difference in leagues other than what I just brought up about the occasional baseball play that comes into it, I think you throw it all out the window. But it's a fun thing to listen to. I mean, that 69 Orioles team, you know, I'll say this. Look, my book numbers don't lie. We obviously go over the 69 series and all of them, and even guys like Harvey and DeGrom are in it and Juan Lagares. But when you talk about that Orioles team, like, they were a powerhouse compared to the Mets. But what did the Mets have on that 69 team? They had the young starting staff that was really good. And they had Nolan Ryan coming out of the bullpen who was wild, but he threw hard. And so there are some similarities that way. I'm not going to call them the 69 Mets because I think the 69 Mets have better defense, and there's no one on the staff that's Tom Seaver. But all that said, there are some similarities there. So it's fun to bring it up in that regard.
Well, before we move back into this here, too, take a minute here and talk about, because this is a great time to have out Numbers Don't Lie, the book coming out this year, and obviously there's been heightened interest with this run that the Mets have been on, and I'm sure at least in the back of your mind, probably an updated edition going to be needed when you factor in 2015 subsequently.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope. It's up to the publisher. It's up to Triumph. But, no, it's a great book because what we don't get to talk about in these profiles that we have on certain numbers, great numbers in Mets history, the graphs and pie charts and things like that back it up. And so there's nice little data. You know, it'll talk about how much the apple weighs. And I can tell you it weighs 26 Pete Falcones. If you want to know how much more, then look in the book. And I was on a show where Pete Falcone was just on before me, and he was on WFAN. And when I said that, it really hit a chord with Ed Randall. And he was like, oh, my God, Pete Falcone was just on. So there's so many Met-isms in there. But, you know, like I said, we have Harvey and DeGrom because they set records in their rookie year. You know, DeGrom went in the rookie of the year. So I had to update his profile three times that year. So I knew there was something special going on with him just because I had to do that. You know, Juan Lagares is undrafted. You know, one of the biggest things you can find out from Numbers Don't Lie, and you can go to Amazon or check Sportsology or just do an internet search for me, and you'll find the information. But Omar Minaya drafted most of these players, so we have to give him credit. Sandy Olsen's done a good job here navigating finally and picking up some players and keeping some healthy. But Omar Minaya drafted almost all these important players.
That's right. Wow. That's right. By the way, Ken, here's another kiss-ass alert. Ed Randall, shout out to another lounge guest.
That's always been one of your strengths, Rick.
Yeah. I always know where to kiss up. I always do. But I have to ask you, Russ, because when we were talking about this here a second ago, the two teams that are 2-0 in the American League Championship Series against another team that went on to play the Mets, of course, the last time the Mets were in the World Series, turn of the century, 2000, with the Yankees, the vaunted Subway Series. Do these Royals in any way, I understand, you know, there's a lot more speed in terms of the stolen bases, in terms of the defense, whatever, but is there any piece of this Royals team that kind of reminds you of the Yankees teams from back then? Because when I look at especially the offensive relentlessness, the pitching staff, it's not overwhelming, but, you know, the Yankees did, you know, they would have maybe Clemens at the top of the rotation and then Pettit, who never had the greatest numbers in the world, but guys after that on paper were kind of underwhelming, at least weren't aces. You know, and the Royals kind of have that. But I'm thinking mostly the offensive relentlessness and the ways they keep coming at you. Is there a little bit of that in these Royals that reminds you of those old Yankees?
Yeah, I think you could say someone like Alex Gordon would probably be like a Paul O'Neill type. And there is no Derek Jeter. I mean, there really isn't. Ben Zobrist is a guy I wanted the Mets to pick up before this year, but the Royals did, and he's a heck of a player. There definitely are some guys. They may not have a Posada behind the plate. They may not have Clemens, but, you know, Ventura certainly throws well. And they have, like, their middling kind of pitcher where Johnny Cueto is sort of on the downslide, but maybe he'll find it in this. Maybe he won't. He's been, you know, a little iffy lately. But I never really thought the Mets were going to win the 2000 series. I went to two games. I enjoyed what I could. But I said if they had any chance to win, they had to win game one, and Armando Benitez blew that. I feel like at least this Mets team won't do that. If it comes down to Familia, I don't believe he'll blow it the way Benitez did in game one. All that said, this Royals team is a really good team. I mean, Kane is a weapon. They have those left-handed hitters, the power hitters. That's a problem for the Mets. The bullpen is definitely a problem for the Mets. I mean, there's no way around that. So there's challenges. I mean, and I knew the Royals would be the favorite, if nothing else, for the home field, and maybe because they were there last year. I mean, but the interesting thing about this Mets team is they played other young teams, and the other young team choked, the Cubs, right? They choked. Mm-hmm. They had choking moments, bad fielding plays, all that. The Mets have had a few errors here and there. Daniel Murphy's not a good fielder. We know that. There, you know, Granderson doesn't cover as much ground as he used to, although he made a really terrific catch. But they haven't buckled under pressure, these youngsters. And so that's at least given me hope that, hey, you know what? That was their first big test, because if they had choked against the Cubs, and people would have said, hey, look, this team's going to be around. They'll be good. You know, it's always nice to say your team is going to be around and let's live out the dynasty. And I'm sure, you know, we all felt that in 86 for the Mets, and I'm sure even the Phillies fans felt that in 2008 and 2009, even though I knew the Yankees would beat them in 2009 because it's hard to go in Yankee Stadium that many games and win. End of the day, though, at least you have what you have right now. You can't worry about who you're signing this year or next year. You look at what you have right now, and this is a really good matchup. You know, I kind of really think this is going to be a long series. I would be shocked. Even though the Mets have only lost two games in the playoffs, I'm pretty sure they're going to lose some in this series.
I would agree that I think it's going to go a long way, and I certainly think that's the case. It's interesting also, first ever matchup of teams in the World Series where both franchises are post-1961 expansion, and it's kind of unlikely that we got to this point because Yankees were the only old-school team in the American League field. Mets were the only non-old-school team in the National League field. So it was going to take the Mets coming out of the National League to make it happen, and they did. And it's interesting. Ken, I want to pose the question to you also, too, whether it be the 2000 Yankees or, again, I know you've got a lot of frame of references in your head. These Royals, you and I have talked a little bit about it off air with the fundamentals, the way they keep coming at you. What are some points of comparison in your mind to the teams you've seen before?
Well, I just think I'm listening to both of you guys, and you bring up very good points. The one thing that Russ touched on was all the home runs that the Royals have had in this postseason. And I think that, to me, that's a bit of a surprise. They hit home runs, but I see them more as a plate discipline type team that they're not going to strike out a lot. They're going to put the ball in play somehow, some way. And that's one of the things I'm going to really focus on as the series starts, because of these young pitchers that the Metropolitans have. Just awesome to watch. I mean, I just sit there and I just go, oh, my God, here's 100 miles an hour. Here's, next guy coming in, another 100 miles an hour. And it's just like, but I see the Royals put the ball in play. They don't strike out. You know, that could all change. But like I mentioned to you, Rick, before we started this evening, they all, and now Russ has said, they all don't throw the same. But from what I've seen, they all just throw high in the zone, and they throw gas. And to see four pitchers in a row that are very similar, and no one hits them eventually, I mean, usually you throw a little dinker-dunker type guy in between in the lineup, you know, in the rotation and this and that, and some guy's got just nothing but a slider and a show-me fastball or whatever the case may be. But these four guys, they just throw – to me, they're almost clones of each other. Now, maybe I'm way off because, Russ, you followed them a lot more than I have.
Yeah, I'm gonna just slightly disagree in that, like, Syndergaard's got this crazy hook, right? So that's something that really does set up his fastball. They all have a changeup. They all may not use it on every occasion, but they do. Each guy has at least three pitches. They really do. And so a lot of times, like even Harvey this year has had to get out of games when his fastball's not working. The good news is for the Mets is these guys are not like, they might be fastball heavy, but I've seen DeGrom and Harvey work out of games when their fastball is not working. Now, Syndergaard, because he's a little younger, yeah, he may only go like 5 1/3, 5 2/3, 6 innings max. But for those 6 innings, I mean, he's got 20 strikeouts in 13 innings. So,
yeah.
But they do have other pitches. They do.
The last point I have for you guys here, I want to get this in before the end, have you guys react to this. A little bit of a scouting report. Okay. Lee Judge from the Kansas City Star. In terms of summing up the Royals, that with the threat of steals, they managed to get a lot of sidestepping going on from opposing pitchers, hence a lot more fastballs, and that they used the threat of the running game to be able to get those fat pitches to be able to drive over the fence. So that's something the Mets are going to have to be able to deal with, as well as the Royals are kind of counterintuitive in today's game. They don't really work counts. See a good pitch, jump on it. And that's not something that a lot of teams are used to seeing. So I'll start with you on that, Russ. Well, what are your thoughts about how the Mets are going to adapt to some of these characteristics of the Royals? Because they did a very good job of adapting to the hitting issues that were able to be exploited with the Cubs.
Yeah, no question. First thing is you have to get on base. So they the Mets haven't put a tremendous amount of guys on base. And they do get a lot of swings and misses. They may pitch high in the zone a lot, but they do move it around. They do have Pulaski on the bench who can throw out guys. So I think they wouldn't hesitate going to him, especially in the American League Park, if they felt like they were getting abused there like Ricky Henderson did against the Diamondbacks, where I think he had like 8 steals in a series, which they're not going to do. They're not going to get that many. But I will also say that the Mets fast, they quick pitch. I don't know if you noticed this, but it's not just Robles on their staff. Familia does it now, and a few of them do it now, and it started a lot of problems early in the season, but now it's become a thing where, hey, it's legal, and they're doing it. So when you're in the box, you got to be ready. And that sort of has worked in their favor, too, especially for guys trying to steal, because they will throw that quick pitch pretty often.
Absolutely. Now, Ken, put on your strategist's hat again. You have managed and coached in countless games out there. When you're looking at a scouting report like the one I just put in front of you here, how do you think the Mets are going to deal with it?
I see it as they hit a pitch they know they can handle. You don't see, like I said, you don't see them strike out because they swing it. They're not just undisciplined or anything like that. Conversely, you don't see a lot of walks out of them either.
Right.
So if you've got a defense, you know, for example, outstanding staff the Mets have. We're all in agreement of that. Now, if you're not walking guys, for example, there are stats out there to back up the speedy pitching. If you throw a pitch in between under 11 seconds from the one that's previous, your mind tells your body that next pitch is where the last one was.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense to you.
Wow.
So quick pitching can help you. That was done. There was a test or a show they had in studies by Kent State years ago on public television. And so if you pitch quickly and work quickly, you've got an advantage right there. If it's under 11 seconds in between the two pitches.
And they definitely do that. I mean, I've seen the Mets do that.
Yeah, when you said that just lit up for me. I'm thinking, wow, okay. I'm going to have to watch that now. So thanks a lot on that, Russ. But and then also 80% of all guys that get on with walks score. Mm-hmm. So advantage Mets on that one, because we've all, you know, from what I've seen, the Royals don't walk. So you're not putting that leadoff guy on. And I can go up and down with different stats on that. One out of every 16 first pitches is a hit. Boom. 1-0 versus 0-1. If it's 1-0 on the first pitch, that team bats 179. If it's 1-0, they bat 327.
Yep.
Just on that first pitch.
I look at those things, too, and I'll tell you the one thing, there's not a lot of waste pitches on this Mets staff. Like in the old days, you'd always have those waste pitches. They don't do a lot. They don't.
Yeah. I mean, if those stats prove up, I didn't make these up because I'm not that smart, but I use them. And it's hard to use with high school kids as compared to DeGrom and the rest of those guys.
Right.
But I just see they're going to cause problems. The Royals are going to cause problems if they get on base.
Sure.
That's an amazing thing there, Ken. That's a jaw dropper what you brought up with the sports science there in terms of the quick pitches and the way that it tricks the mind in that. We'll have to see to what extent that plays a part in the series here. We've come to the end, this being now prediction time, so I will go out on a limb. My guess is we're all going to say this is going to be a long or relatively long series. If I had less doubts about the uncharted territory as far as the Mets pitchers and how many innings over career high they were, I think I would probably go to the Mets, because anytime there's this much of a pronounced difference in the talent level of the starting pitching, I would kind of tend to defer to that. Instead, again, I'm just sort of taken by the scrappiness and the relentlessness of these Royals. They remind me a lot of the team that beat them last year, the San Francisco Giants, and Maybe that's why the Giants had to sweat like it. They didn't in either of their two previous World Championships to get it done. I'll say Royals in six. Sorry about that, Russ.
That's okay. I'm going to go Mets in six. I think it would be awfully tough for them for a game seven there. I like the atmosphere in KC, and I think they would get a home field advantage. I think the Mets could jump out with a game one win and sort of be in the driver's seat, and I think that's going to be the plan. And so I like them in six. I am worried about the Royals' speed for sure. I am worried about the left-handed power bats, and I'm worried about their middle relief, which is fantastic, and their closer, which is great.
Well, if that happens, Ken, that means that they're going to have to beat Johnny Cueto in game six or beat the bullpen, which is hard to do as well. So that's going to be very difficult. What are your thoughts, Ken?
Well, I'm listening to you both, and Russ has really educated me here with the Metropolitans, and I'm just like, you know, if I could get rid of the Royals starting line, starting rotation, and put the Mets rotation with the defense that the Royals have,
it'd be unbeatable.
they'd be a team for the ages. They really would. But that rotation of the Russ, you just changed my mind. I was going to go with the Royals, but I'm going to have to go with the Mets now.
Interesting. How many do you think it's going to go?
I think it's going to go the full seven.
Okay, interesting.
They both play in very big parks.
Yep.
The hitting doesn't knock your socks off for either team. But, I'm going to switch mid-show here because of Russ, who will doggone you. But I'm going to go with the Mets in seven.
Good thing I didn't tease by saying that you were going to agree with me. I must have had an instinct on not to to go there, because then I don't look silly on that as you make your pick. But as was said at the beginning, that this was going to be an outstanding segment. Again, we've had a lot of baseball talks here on the FDH Lounge, and Ken, you've been a part of a lot of them. And I don't know where exactly this would rank, but this is way, way, way up there. This segment, I will brag about it endlessly. You guys were tremendous, as I knew you would be, and people would never believe that you'd never done a segment together before, but a true pleasure. As always, I've always said, Ken, you form instant chemistry with everybody. I remember the first time I sat down with you at the station. It was impromptu. We did 2 hours. I felt like I'd known you my whole life. So, you know, I knew it was going to be great in that regard, but I can't thank both of you enough. Russ, thanks very much. I certainly hope that this leads to increased sales of Numbers Don't Lie with the Mets.
I appreciate it.
Success here.
Yes.
And I learned a lot from Ken, too, believe me.
You guys are awesome together. This will not be the last time we do this, I can assure everybody. Popular demand would force me to say that, even if I didn't want to, because people are going to love this so much. But I really, really appreciate it. And, Kenny, thank you so much for being there again, my man. It was a pleasure to talk stretch run baseball with you around Labor Day. It'll be great to do some stuff in the off season also. And, of course, your old show will be coming back as a podcast, Life's a Pitch with Ken Detweiler. More about that in the days and weeks to come. But thank you so much, Ken.
Oh, thank you so much. And, Russ, it was a pleasure also. Both
Same
of you guys,
here.
It went too quickly. That's all I'm going to say.
It did indeed. It always does. But, again, that's what happens when you have a great conversation going as we did today. Thank you all, everybody, for tuning in to this joint mini episode of the FDH Lounge, as well as Sportsology Radio.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.